everybody. Welcome to the Ann and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge. Right now, for some reason, we are not going live on Twitter. I don't know what's up with that. I'll have to look into that. It's probably Twitter's fault. So if you usually watch us on Twitter, then, you know, what if I make the title shorter? What if I just do that and see if that makes it work? And like, maybe Twitter just doesn't like how long the title of this is. Yes, that was actually, that fixed it. Hi, everyone on Twitter. You're getting a slight delay cast here, I guess, because a dead demon destruction made Twitter mad, and I had to shorten it before this would go live. But anyway, you might notice we have an extra face today. I'd like to introduce Richard Eisenbeis. He was on the last trailer watch party with me. Right. And Gigic, and was it just the three of us?
Yes.
Why do I feel like there was a fourth person?
And I feel like there was a fourth person too.
You guys had a producer, didn't you? Like that you were.
No. Wait, no,
we did. But they.
Had people, but on screen it was Richard and Gigic and me, and that's it.
Maybe it was just that we were talking with people off screen a whole lot. So maybe that was.
They just feel like a fourth person. That was really weird. But anyway, Richard is he's in Japan. He's our Japan correspondent slash associate editor for our editorial department, and he has already seen all of Dead Demons Destruction. I'll get it eventually. The film version that has already aired in mm-hmm. Japanese theaters. The version that we're getting on Crunchyroll now is a recut with extra footage, supposed to run for 18 episodes, and is a TV series. So we're going to be diving into that. We're also going to talk about Yatagarasu. I don't know if Richard was able to get caught up on that.
Unfortunately, no.
James and I were talking off camera that like marathoning Yatagarasu is probably not a good idea. Like, there's just so much intrigue. It'd be like trying to marathon Shogun or something like that, right? Mm. There's just like, there's no time to kind of like sit and think about the pieces. So, yeah. So we're going to talk about Yatagarasu, and then, you know, Kaiju number 8 had some stuff happen.
We could breeze through that in like probably 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was a great episode with some cool fights, and you know, everyone got drunk at the end. It was a great time. It's just continuously not like a lot of meat on the bone yet with Kaiju number 8. But before we get to our anime stuff, I did want to plug something I'm involved in because I can. If you were over on the Anime News Network, you might have seen that there is now the first ever American Manga Awards. The name, if it's not clear, is just that it takes place in America. This isn't like just for OEL or anything like that, American manga, that, you know. But we're having the first ever. It'll be in New York the day before Anime NYC, which is August 22nd. And I am one of the judges for the continuing manga and new manga categories. We've got specialists for some of the other ones, like translation and lettering and whatnot. But I'm very excited about it. So I just want to let everyone know that that's going to happen. If you're in New York, I was going to say if you're in New York, come, but it's like an exclusive thing to get into. So there's limited seating. It's taking place at Japan Society, which if you've ever been there, is not a very large venue as far as like their seating or whatnot, but, you know, keep your eyes out.
I think the extra cool kids.
I guess so. But if publishers listen to this podcast, they are accepting nominees right now. So if there's a work that was published this year that you feel deserves to be honored, and you know, we've got the Eisners too, but this is just for manga. So you know, go ahead and send that in, and I don't know, we'll confer and get back to you guys with the winners in August. So. That's about it as far as news for that goes. Let's get right into Dead Demon, because I watched that. I was excited for this. I've read, like, I think the first manga volume quite a while ago. It's an Enio Asano work. So if you've read Richard's reviews, the themes that are in the reviews are very reminiscent of Enio Asano. Like, I was reading a review of of the second film, Richard, about its take on humanity. I was like, yeah, that's an Asano. That's an Asano take. We probably shouldn't get too much into spoilers, but why don't you talk a little bit about episode zero, Richard? Because I, based on your review, I didn't watch it. I haven't seen
it. Yeah. Episode zero is a kind of crazy because it takes, assuming that we're adapting what I saw in the theaters, like it's almost entirely the same footage. Episode zero is an epilogue set several years after the events of both films, so of the series overall. Mm-hmm. It is, as an epilogue, it was incredibly cool and super interesting to see the effects of everything we saw at the climax of the film.
Right.
But as like the start, I can't imagine how that would make you feel as a viewer, because it is so different from what the actual meat of the series is about.
Oh, okay.
It's not about killer robots hunting people, strange balls floating in the air that make you explode if you touch them, you know, crazy stuff like that.
Yeah.
No, it's about how aliens arrive and nothing changes. Like, that's what it's really about.
Right.
Humans don't change, things like that. Girls go to school, have normal coming of age adventures.
Didn't you say that episode zero kind of follows, I think it's Kadode's dad, right? Who, yes. In episode one proper, we do get a little bit with him where once the aliens first arrive, he takes a call, says he's just going to like go to work. He's again voiced by the same guy who voiced Nanami in JJK. So he sounds exhausted and overworked the entire time. But
one of the best is like typecast at this point.
It is. It is. Yeah. And it works for me every single time. Yes, again. But he just leaves for work. He tells his daughter not to come out. I mean, there's the visuals, which we can talk about a little more later, kind of insinuate there's this sort of radiation or aura or just like really unpleasant high-pitched noise sort of thing. And he turns and says, don't come outside. And then he never came home. It was kind of like the went out to get a pack of cigarettes, didn't come back sort of situation. So I'm wondering if episode zero kind of tells you where he, what happened to him.
Yeah, kind of, it does. It does, but it like does so to the point that it spoils the entire series.
Okay.
Like it's very, very, very blatant. Like it throws, episode zero basically throws everything at you and expects you to pick none of it up if you're a new viewer. It's, you're just supposed to be so confused that you watch episode one to try to understand everything you just saw. Like that's the strategy.
So it doesn't even really work as like a, because you know sometimes shows will do that thing where they'll kind of start you in medias res or even like in the final act of the story.
Right. This isn't in media res. This is epilogue res. Like this is in the epilogue, very much so.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll continue to not watch it because like I don't think that the first episode necessarily needs that kind of hook to get you to watch it either, because there's enough like weird stuff just immediately in episode one to make you intrigued to find out more, right? Like some of it is a little hard to parse, and maybe we should just sort of like get this out of the way now. The subtitles on episode one are dub titles, and the timing is set to the English dub track, and there are no subtitles for any on-screen text. And on-screen text is prominently used in the first episode in a number of ways. I thought it's neat that they kind of kept a sound effect thing going on. So there's like stray hiragana every once in a while that are just kind of like in the background there. But it's also used to show like jumps through time and place. A couple names. Characters have official titles and whatnot that are in like the military or the government that we just don't know because that text does not appear on screen. So
it's the timing stuff that really got me, because there aren't, I mean, there's use of costumes and stuff, but there's not like a very strong transitional effect from like different time periods.
Yeah.
And so there were a couple of scenes where it took me a moment to be like, wait a minute, is this, how old is it Kadode? Is that her name?
Kadode. Everyone's Kadode. Names are also very not typical. So they're like, that makes them memorable, but it also for some reason makes it harder for me to remember. Like there's Kadode and Otan. And those are the only two I'm remembering off the top of my head. But Yeah.
But yeah, that was the hardest part, was because the kind of before and after impact of her dad's disappearance and the arrival of this giant spaceship is so prominent, and it's such a big part of this first episode. I really would have appreciated some stronger, and again, if the on-screen text that wasn't being translated was meant to be, you know, the indicator that really helped us kind of follow that not chronological timeline, then yeah, it's a shame that the subtitles weren't integrated right.
Yeah, like for instance, Richard, maybe you can tell me who this guy actually is. Is this the new prime minister, or is he just some... Okay, like
he's the new prime minister. On his like, it says that he's the prime minister in the like the non-diegetic subtitle, like sign that pops up.
Yeah,
and then on his desk it has his name.
Okay, like,
because it's on his desk, right? And neither of those are translated. Neither the diegetic nor the non-diegetic. So you're just kind of left going, who is the guy with idol stuff in the background?
Right, yeah.
Is he the mayor? Is he some like other, you know, the fact that he's prime minister, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And I mean, this also kind of gives away what year this takes place in, because he's got a calendar prominently in the back. So we know that the aliens descended in 2039, because I believe this is part of the 3-year flashback, right?
Yes.
Because the current, and there's even a flashback to earlier than that, because the girls are not in I think they're in elementary school initially. Yeah. So there's a couple shifts through time, because they're now planning to graduate and they're talking about university, but then there's a flashback with, unless you kind of noticed Kaori's hair is much different, where they're talking about getting into high school. And it did like give me pause for a minute. I'm like, wait, I thought they said university. Are they about to take entrance exams for high school? But no. Yeah, that's segment was a flashback, because they're currently in high school. Yeah.
So is it 3 years between the descending of the aliens and the majority of what happens in the episode?
Yeah. And the majority of the series takes place over the like 3 to 4 year mark since the aliens have arrived.
Right.
Okay. See, I didn't know that at all, because like when we get to the part where her mom introduces new stepdad.
Yeah.
All they really say is, well, you know, it's been so long since your dad hasn't come back. And I'm like, well, how long has it been? Has it been like 6 months? Has it been a year? And I knew that like some amount of time had passed, but three years is a big deal.
And that's the thing, like without, you know, that being translated in the subtitle version, you know, that's hard to follow everything. Right.
Yeah. Richard, like we were going to keep it civil or whatever, but you actually did a little bit of like reaching out to contacts to kind of figure out how this happened.
Yeah. So from what I gather is the subtitles here were not, and the dubbing were not done like in-house by Crunchyroll. They were done by a company called Ocean Productions. And I do want to make it clear that like for all the problems we're mentioning, 90% of it was fine.
Yeah.
It's just that 10% was real confusing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I looked a bit into it. The translator of it is a person who has lots of experience, has done a lot of the Gundams, has done Black Lagoon. So it's lots of like experience. But I also noticed in the official credits, there's that the scripts were quote unquote adapted by someone. And what that tells me is when you're translating for translating for subtitles, you basically can translate everything, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're translating for a dub, you have a certain amount of time that you need to fit all the information into. You need to match the lip flaps and you need to match the scene transition timings, right?
Right.
So what that means is sometimes you're gonna have to cut things and reorder things or whatever. And that's, so, you know, there's that in there too. So that led to some, I would say questionable translations that I came across, but I'm hesitant to, you know, get on a soapbox about it, because you know, that's kind of also the nature of the beast. And then, and there's always, you have to understand, like people think translation is like, it either is or it isn't, like it's perfect or it's not, but that's not really how translation is. It's, there's two schools of thought on translation. It's as close to the Japanese as possible, which makes it come out usually feeling a little unnatural or not containing the context that a layman would need to fully understand what's being said. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have who cares what the individual words are. What's most important is that the meaning is accurately conveyed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you want that. And in truthfulness, there are very few people that are on those extremes. 90% of all translators are somewhere in the middle. You know, yeah. They may be more towards one side than the other, but like that's how it is. So sometimes, yeah, I watch a lot of anime and I go, I wouldn't have translated it that way. But at the same time, I'm not going to stand out and go, oh, that's wrong. That's
right. Yeah, wrong. More preferential.
Because there is no completely wrong is very, very, very rare. That's not something you run across.
And I don't know this is just like my approach to it. I expect like a higher level of flexibility or sort of like just kind of not adapting, but just like I don't expect dubs to be as accurate as subs because of the limitations that you mentioned. And I do also think just because, you know, then you're getting into like English delivery and colloquialisms and all those other sorts of things. And so I just think like, I expect that more looseness with a dub and that doesn't bother me. I think that's fine. Some people might have different opinions on that, but what it's sounding like though still is that even if that, you know, someone adapted the script, that was done by the original translator, it's still strange to me that the adapted script that was used for the dub ended up being the subtitles.
And actually, there's actually one other thing that's really crazy about that, because in the dub version, which clearly seems to have been the focus of what they were trying to put out, the dub version, you know, it does have all the 3 years ago stuff fully translated, right?
Yeah, and you said if we switch to the dub, all the signs and stuff are translated.
It's
a different file. Like, it's not just a different audio track, but it's a fully different video file because it's like hard-coded in.
Yeah.
But the thing is, even that has an incredible error in it.
Yeah.
There is a, around the 4 minute mark, which is where the UFO is first revealed, right? Mm-hmm. We get a voiceover of Kodate talking about like how she views the world, right? How she wanted things to change and now she wants things to be the same kind of thing. Yeah, that exact thing. So starting from that frame to the start of the credits, there's this voiceover. That voiceover isn't in the English dub. It's just silent.
Wow. Yeah, because you're talking about it, right? I'm like, because I didn't recall what you were describing really at all. And I'm assuming that's because it's only in the dub.
Yeah, well, no, it's in the subtitle version, like, it has it there.
Oh, okay.
Like, the subs are there, the Japanese voiceover is there. But if you look on the dub version, from that frame on, it's quiet until the credits start. They forgot to put in the voice track.
Or perhaps, I mean, it could be that that maybe that was, like, a decision by the dub director that they thought
was better.
That was maybe redundant information that was already going to be, you know, communicated later. I don't know, but that is.
I disagree with that, but yeah, maybe.
There are a lot of reasons, but not a lot of them, I think, make much sense.
Well, and what's really odd is if you turn on if you're watching the dub version and you turn on closed captions, the dub titles are still there, even though there's no voice.
Okay. So yeah, that makes it sound like they just straight up forgot.
There's a lot wrong with this episode on the like localization front.
Yeah, presentation and definitely.
That reminds me, it's so crazy that this isn't the same era, but it's kind of another like really glaring kind of localization error from like a really professional source, because I've been covering GoGo Loser Ranger, and a couple weeks ago, there was a line that it kind of like derailed my whole viewing experience, because in the subtitle track, they just didn't translate a line, or they didn't translate
pronouns, right? Pronouns. Like they couldn't figure out how to make switching between two different from like Ore to Boku or something work.
Yeah.
Right. Cause he talks differently based on whether he's himself or pretending to be someone else. Right?
Yeah. And so the subtitles literally said, what? Ore? I mean, Boku? No way. Like, and just in the subtitles, it just said Ore and Boku. And I was like, what? I've never in my life seen.
I have actually. Didn't something like that show up in one of the Shinkai films?
So,
isn't it Your Name?
and your name, well, there's, so I got into it with some people because people were coming at me with this exact example.
Okay.
And I would argue that the difference there, I don't like that translation, to be honest. I think that there are better ways to do it than just parenthesizing, you know, this kind of pronoun versus this kind of pronoun. But at least in that one, it had the subtitled, like, basically a translator note where it said, me, male pronoun, me, female pronoun. So at the very least, like, the audience was understanding what the joke was supposed to be. It is the joke, but it still communicates it. Mm-hmm. In this case, they didn't do that at all. It literally just says Ore and Boku and expects the non-Japanese speaking people reading the subtitles to on know Hulu. What that means. And then it just moves on.
Yeah.
And it was very, very, very strange. And the funniest thing was I'm not a translator by any means, but I came up with I think serviceable rendition of how you could communicate that line. And a bunch of other people did too, within like a couple of minutes. Like it wasn't like a 5 minute long back and forth, you know, like theatrical parlay where there's like all these puns flying around. It was like one single instance of him flubbing his level of politeness. And I'm like, there's like a million ways you could do that. You know, you could throw in a little bit of vulgarity. You could, you know, have him, you know, you could have him use some overly casual language that doesn't sound like super nice and sweet. Like, there's a lot of ways, but to just like not translate it at all, it's just very odd. Very odd.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I feel like that specific example is hard to, I mean, I heard that you were saying like, you have to do it with tone. Like you were saying, like you have to,
what the hell? I mean, you know, like,
You have to hone in on a different personality trait or something.
Again, this is one of those things where we were talking about the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
But somebody, he went hardcore, whoever's translating that, sorry, he, she, they, were going for something that was as direct translation as possible, where it probably would have been a better choice to go for the more contextually correct translation, right? You don't have to, the pronoun isn't the joke. The vulgarity is the joke. The way of speaking changing is the joke. It doesn't have to change in the same way.
Right.
It just has to change. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But then again, I understand some people are very, 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 very serious about like, no, I want every word exactly as it was in the Japanese. I don't care if it sounds strange or doesn't quite work in English. You know, I want every bit of the author's original intent. And that's a fair view, but it's also really hard to watch for anyone who isn't of that exact mindset.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, well, and also for people that don't already have some understanding of the language, right?
Right.
That was my issue was, you know, even with the translator's note, even though like I tend to sway more towards the more liberal adaptations. I tend to think that tone and intent, when it's being wielded by an author that knows what they're doing, can be really, really effective, even if you have to make some radical changes to the literal meaning. But at the very least, like, you got to put like a note in there because again, like, you know, if, like, you have to imagine if someone was just channel surfing through Hulu, saw that there's this cartoon that's like Power Rangers, but gritty. I remember Power Rangers from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't watch anime, but maybe this would be a good one. They don't know Japanese. They don't speak a word of it. And all of a sudden there's like this sentence that just is now, it's now just as gibberish as it would have been if they could not put a subtitle there at all.
What about the content of the show? I guess we should kind of like dive into that a little more. One of the
still
things,
good.
it's very good. I kind of hope this gets ironed out for the episode that'll drop in a couple days. I want to talk about the voice performances a little bit. So they have the two voice actors for the two main girls, Karore and I just said what her name was.
Ouran.
Ouran. Okay.
Or Otan is.
Otan.
Yeah, Otan is the nickname, and then.
Oh, okay, okay.
So yeah, either one is fun.
Yeah.
Like the host.
Like what?
Like Ouran High School host.
Oh, like Ouran High School host.
That's how I remembered it.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. LFR asks, what are we talking about? We're talking about Dead Dead Demons Destruction. So they got two the voice actors for them, I think, are predominantly musicians first, if I'm right, instead of voice actors. And I think they're doing a pretty good job. But I have noticed that usually when you get like fresh new talent, especially in theatrical anime, I tend to see it more there first than TV anime. I can usually tell when they haven't like been through what I assume is like the standard like VA school or something like that. There's just like the voice is just not the same, and you don't really notice how there's like maybe a similar cadence or something.
They don't fall into like the archetypes that we're used
yeah.
to. They don't, they sound a lot more like, not to denigrate and like, you know, the more traditional style of acting, but they sound a lot more like regular people, like just, you know, real people, right? Mm-hmm. They don't sound like, you know, the girlfriend character, the childhood friend character, the spazzy, hyperactive athlete character. Like, you know, a lot of these characters have, you know, over the decades, have these very, I think by design, I think derivative, not in a bad way, but derivative in the sense that they are very intentionally trying to evoke the same kind of character as this performer did, who did it for this performer, and so on and so forth. And yeah, I think it's very easy to spot when you've watched a lot of anime where it's like, oh, they're doing something different. They're not doing the usual high school girl voice, which is, I think, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of appreciated it. Richard, like, what was your first impression on the performances when you saw it in theaters?
You know, I didn't even really think about that. Like, I heard about that actually after the fact. I didn't notice while watching. Because I think the whole point of it is that despite the world-changing events in the periphery, they are the most normal people around, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they're girls who are about to graduate from high school and have no idea what they're going to do with their lives. And boy, didn't everybody face that?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's just, click the wrong button there. Yeah, I mean, despite everything that's changed, I mean, you got a love confession in this first episode. The girls go out and eat okonomiyaki and kind of like ribby, you know, poke at each other and like start.
I love their banter, man. Their banter is so, it feels, it's just so down to earth. And
yeah. Very does it remind you of your students at all, James? Like, is it pretty?
Yeah. Yeah. Refreshingly so, because again, I think a lot of times, you know, anime about teenagers, they tend to write them either way too mature and just kind of, you know, exposition, or, you know, they're very cartoony and exaggerated. But the, you know, the way that these girls are just like, you know, talking shit and making fun of each other. And Ordon especially, who's just like, these capitalist pigs. It's like,
She says that, but like, she has no, there's like nothing to back it up other than to kind of like be a little edgy. And
yeah, it's a meme. She's just, you know, she's just trolling. She's just
And that's kind of the thing. Like, that's just who she is. Like, I mean, she literally like goes to out to, what was it, like dinner with her friend and just whoops out a like party helmet.
She's like, I couldn't tell if that was like, is this just more of a visual, weird visual gag because this girl is odd, right? Just kind of odd. Or if
she sees her friend is going through struggles, right?
Yeah.
Like, as odd and crazy and weird as she sees that her friend is like lost in life, is dealing with the fact that her mom's a hypochondriac, her mom's new boyfriend wants to replace her dad, you know, all this stuff. How do you cheer up your friend? Be a little weird. Do something that doesn't make any sense. Like,
just anything kind of break to help the ice on that, for sure. I mean, I like her stepdad well enough, even if he's definitely probably overstepping his bounds, giving boundaries given like her age and everything.
He's clearly not trying to be a bad person.
1950s varsity quarterback from America fashion, which I thought was really funny.
His jacket is something else. I also noticed that her backpack, the little mushroom guy backpack, this is just like alternate reality Doraemon, right?
It is, yes. Yeah. 100% it's Doraemon.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, we it gets more and more blatant how Doraemon it is when we start seeing the actual like source material.
Oh, really?
And it's done in that artist's art style.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They had a couple pages where.
Oh, did they? Okay, yeah.
Where it's like flipping through. It looks, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, that looks a lot like Fujio F. Fujio or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, I'm enjoying it. It left off on kind of a cliffhanger where one of the, it's sort of like a UFO, but not quite a UFO. It seems more like
a scout ship.
Yeah. It hits a power line, which short circuits it and it crashes. My impression is the two corpses next to it were part of the ship, were piloting the ship, as opposed to just being like two random passerbys who got hit by one of the fallen cords or something. But
yeah, they look a little grays.
Yeah, they've got little pear-shaped bodies or something like that. But also really, really well animated, which I feel like we can sort of expect with the movie quality first and then just sort of adding on to it. But I mean, everything, you know, there weren't any like still pans and the sort of those other shortcuts you tend to see a lot in TV anime.
The colors are really lush. The background art was
incredible. Yeah, the background art's really nice too.
Honestly, so. The thing I'm the most curious about is it's supposed to run for 18 episodes, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess including that zero, that would be about like an entire film's worth of new material. So I'm wondering, is it just going to be like filling in and extending scenes, or
I don't know, because like each movie was about 2.5 hours long.
Oh, really?
2.5. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
They were meaty.
Okay.
Okay.
So it like I might be off by a little, but yeah, they were basically 2.5 hours apiece.
Okay.
Because you know, I saw when I went out, there were trailers, and you know, it's hard to get the exact number, but they were very, very meaty.
Okay. I was defaulting 90 minutes. So
yeah. Well, even a 2-hour movie, that's like 6 episodes a piece, so that's still
right.
Right.
So there could be some more. Like, yeah, it could with the because I mean that whole episode, the episode zero was 100% original. New? Nothing I had seen in the theater. Like with the exception of maybe like 5 still frames or something that are when they're explaining like the flashbacks. But yeah. Yeah, the visuals on it are great the whole way through. I think one of my favorite things about it is the character designs, because there are no characters that are like typical anime bishonen bishoujo, right? Yeah. None of them. Yeah. There's no pretty boys, no pretty girls. Everybody is pretty real. Like, that's not to say that some aren't attractive. There are plenty of attractive characters.
Yeah.
But like, it's very clear, like some characters have buck teeth. Some have constant blush marks. Oron has leaky eyes.
Yeah.
And she drools. She has leaky eyes. Right. Like, that's a very common thing for her throughout the show.
Yeah. I remember like, that was something that actually held me off of the manga
just
for a little bit.
Her. It's not like other characters.
Because I was just like,
that.
The main character's just, dripping all the time. You know? it didn't feel as egregious in this episode. Like, it shows up like in this one scene I have on screen, but it didn't seem like her nose was constantly running, which was the impression I got from the manga at first. I had to kind of get over it because it grosses me out. But
that'd be such a pain in the ass to animate. I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, you know what, we're gonna pull back on that because we can't afford every single frame to have stuff dribbling out of her nose.
Yeah.
But yeah, she has wet eyes constantly. Yeah, like it's very like there's a very, very wide array of character design throughout the show, which is super nice stuff.
The first screenshot I grabbed, I was playing a game where I could like tag all of my friends because there was like a dozen different facial types, and it was like that guy with the long Pinocchio nose. And
Yeah, there is a guy with, I noticed him too. And it's because like what Richard said, like everyone's not pretty, so that means they instead have more distinctive features, and so it's easier to kind of like recall them based on that. Like if Ultan wasn't dripping all the time, I'd remember her for her eyebrows, because they're like, you know, they're like not brackets, but you know, they're big, even for
like Haku and eyebrows
for
Haku, but what's his name, the agent guy,
we all know. We don't. Yeah. We all know what you mean. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that about sums it up for day to day. Richard, do you want to stick around for Kaiju?
Yeah, I can stay for Kaiju. Unfortunately, I don't have much to say about Yatagarasu, but
yeah, sure. Okay, sure. Let me get our first picture up. So this opens with Kaiju number 8, and he's fighting his sub-captain, the foxy-looking guy who immediately kind of like finds his core here. But most of this episode wasn't really the fight necessarily, but that's kind of like the big opener. And then it was a lot of
partying
and just sort of like loose end kind of stuff. James, do you want to talk about what happened in this episode?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, you basically summarized the first half. Soshiro fights Kafka.
Yeah. And
it ends up being kind of a stalemate. Thankfully, because, you know, obviously we don't want Kafka to die. I was theorizing a couple weeks ago, or no, last week, that I kind of thought he maybe suspected that Kafka was the kaiju, but that seems to not be the case, because he genuinely seems like shocked that this humanoid kaiju is so hard to kill, and he seems genuinely determined to murder it. But then later on in the episode, he's actually pretty cordial and polite with Kafka. And so it does seem like he is completely or more or less in the dark.
So they fight. Because like it's clear he doesn't like he likes and doesn't like Kafka, as a person.
But that's completely irrelevant. Well, because Kafka sucks at most things.
Yeah. Well, he sucks at most things, and like, you know, he has a connection that I forget Mina? The name, the main girl, with Mina, that no one else has, that no one else can get.
Yeah.
And the idea of, like, as ludicrous as it is based on skill level, you know, he is probably the one person who could, you know, replace the vice commander just by personal connection. So it makes sense that he'd feel threatened on that level. But that has, but that's completely different to his feelings about Kaiju number 8.
Yeah. And Nicholas Dupree brings up that there's a lot of things that he might suspect first before, you know, Kafka can turn into a kaiju, which is unheard of. But this episode is also the one where they first learn that there is another kaiju that can take on human form. So I feel like that could, you know, sort of help them draw that connection to be suspicious of him sooner, now that they know that is a capability of some kaiju.
Well, it doesn't help that people keep like almost spilling the beans. Like,
Kafka keeps almost spilling the beans too.
Not just Kafka, but even Reno, because what's his name? Sharptooth guy.
Yeah.
Reno's boyfriend.
Boyfriend. Yeah.
He's like thanking Kafka and like, thank you for saving me. And they're like, no, he's right there, man. He's right there. You can't.
Shut up. I just let that one go too for the sake of the joke, because I was like, you know, when they walked in the room, they had to pass by his bed first before they got to Kafka's, because Kafka's was by the window. But it's like,
Well, it's Reno that's in bed, not.
You're right. Yes. It's Reno that's in bed. So he would have to not know that the other guy was directly next to him. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just a matter of time before like everyone in the city knows that it's Kafka.
Right.
It's like I've been playing Infinite Wealth, the new like a dragon game.
Yeah.
And one of Kiryu's first lines to Ichiban is by the way, no one can know that I'm here. I'm like super undercover, so like we got to keep my presence on the down low. And like almost immediately after that, I get into a fight, and Ichiban's like, just like the Dragon of Dojima would do. It's like, dude, what did he just say?
Keep it on the DL. Yeah. Other than
and then they party for a while.
Yeah, they do party for a while, and you know, we get a training sequence with Hoshina, which made me feel weird because he was kind of hot during it, but I'm not like, but he still has a bowl cut. So this is like very confusing for me personally. But the other part, I don't know, content warning, I guess. We get some like Parasite level body horror in here that I liked a lot. I thought it was really well animated. This whole giant baby head man
thingy
thing. Yeah.
Feel bad for that guy who just, you know.
just wanted the dude to get out of the road. He was going somewhere. Maybe he just got off work and the guy's walking in the middle of the tunnel. First mistake he made was getting out of the car.
Never get out of the car.
Don't do it. You got two lanes. Just go around him. Like we don't need this. But yeah, that was more or less it. He's taken on a new identity now. Got himself a not Mazda, I think, is what he's driving there. That looks like an upside down Mazda logo, I think, on the steering wheel. And we also saw, James, I don't know if we got a screenshot. The monster that looks like it is, yes, this guy. Although when we see him close up, he's got a really cool voice and he's got two sets of teeth. So
yeah.
And apparently an army of not dragons, wyvern type.
Kaiju. He looks like a tokusatsu villain. Like
he does.
Villain for sure.
Yeah.
I was very excited to see him.
Richard, you said you've read the manga, right? Some of it?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you know who this guy is?
Oh, yeah.
Should we be excited for this guy? Is this guy cool or? Let us down easy.
It's more like we have to get more villains than just Kaiju number 9, who's kind of big bad territory kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
So is that character cool? Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. But you know, it's very clear that like
he's not kind of, endgame.
It almost feels like he appears so that there's somebody other than 9 to fight.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of thing. But he is still very cool and he is it's a good bad guy. Good bad guy. That's my non-spoiler take.
Okay. He's got good villain design in general, shiny red. And everything is pretty cool. So
yeah, and I'm happy with the pacing is very good. Like I know where they're going, I know where they're going to end, like what point they're going to end on, they chose the correct climax to end on
for the season.
For the season, they could have gone a little farther. They could have, you know, maybe there's various places they could have stopped, but there was one obvious one and that's the one they're aiming for. And
gotcha.
It should be, it will satisfy if you've liked the show.
Yeah.
And
I agree with you about the pacing. I think the pacing has been excellent. Especially, and again, not to make too many comparisons, but I've been watching Go-Go Loser Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this the latest arc that the anime has been in, I think has dragged pretty horribly.
Oh,
and,
okay.
I think it's kind of a great contrast to because Kaiju number 8 also has, this has basically been an extended training / graduating mission arc. And for me, this is paced pretty perfectly. Like at no point was I bored. At no point was I feeling like the story didn't have any focus or direction. It's been a little light on character development and more of like the meteor story stuff that makes it more interesting to talk about. But as far as just like sitting down to watch an episode every week, it's been a really breezy watch. So
yeah,
I can't complain about
that. When it comes to Loser Ranger, same thing. I know where they're going. I know what the climax they're going to do for the season is. I agree that it's probably the one you choose when you're planning out the series.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, like where they are now, the training arc, I do believe is the weakest arc of Go-Go Loser Ranger.
That's good to hear because it hasn't been awful, but it's definitely been like, all right.
I would say it's the weakest. And I don't mean this in don't get me wrong. Like it's a super important arc. Most of the characters, actually pretty much every character you meet in that arc isn't just like a one-off character. They will be back in the story involved and maybe not next arc, but maybe 3 arcs from now or whatever, they'll be back. So it doesn't feel like you're wasting your time getting to know them in the long run. I would say this is kind of the weakest arc and it only gets better. It just step by step gets better. It's kind of like, if you've read Chainsaw Man, it has a very clear like 100 issue arc or 100, right? Like that's very much Loser Ranger is the exact same thing. It has I think 110, 120 episode arc. And it's all built towards that. And then, then we get that kind of resets and skips and, stuff like that and move on.
Resetting
to
the
arc.
Board and
And it's, so it's very good, but like, that's kind of like how I would how I look at it. It's the same as like Chainsaw Man in that aspect.
Well,
that
you know, comparing it to Chainsaw Man is making me feel very, very reassured. So
yeah, and like I said, like little by little, it gets better and better. And then of course, just like with Chainsaw Man, when we get to that big mega climax at the end of the 100 issues, you know, it's 100% worth it. Like you will, it is no letdowns at all. It was so much fun.
We've had two different people in the comments who wanted us to acknowledge the most recent chapter of Chainsaw Man. I have not read it, but I have seen the panels. I
haven't read it either.
Okay. I don't want to spoil it for Richard. Just read it. There are a lot of jokes. There are a lot of jokes currently in the A&N Discord under the What Are You Reading channel. So Richard, don't go in there until you read it.
I don't know if I would necessarily say you can't really, I don't know if you can really spoil it, because the beauty is in the execution. Because it's not like a chapter where a lot happens. In fact, only one thing happens, really. Uh-huh. But just the fact that the chapter exists, mm-hmm. and is of course drawn with such masterful pacing and attention to detail, is genuinely, again, no one is doing it like Fujimoto. Like really, like truly, he's just operating on a different level than most of us are capable.
What I'll say is that, okay, what I'll say about it is I'm glad that it happened, because a lot of manga, shut up, James. A lot of manga, you know, toy with that. Rarely is it committed to paper. I think it makes sense for both characters. I think it's realistic for the situation that it happens in. And that's what I'll say. Hopefully that, you know, I feel like we're spoiling just by sitting here like smirking about it even. So that's just what I'll say. And I'll leave it at that. So,
yeah.
Chapters are short. It's pretty easy to catch up on. So I'll probably do that later. Like Quanti 5 says, I read Chainsaw Man for the articles. So there we go. right. Okay. Well, I think we're going to dive into Yatagarasu. Richard, thank you so much for your time. Hopefully we have you on again soon. Sure,
anytime.
And everybody, you know, read his reviews of Dead Dead Demons of Destruction. It's they're really great.
It's really good.
It's really good.
It's going to be good, guys. We're in for a ride here. Yeah. All right. See ya.
Bye. All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.
All right. James, it's time for the soapiest soap opera that's currently airing.
I'm so excited.
This show's amazing. It's so good.
I watched this episode a little earlier than usual because it's my summer break, so I have all this time on my hands. And the minute I finished it, I was like, I need Lindsay to watch this episode
so someone can understand all right, so
everything that is going down.
Yes, so quick bullets off the top on Yatagarasu. Quick bullets off the top, okay? We get... First, let me open my cheat sheet so I get everybody's name, because I'm very excited right now, which means I'm gonna forget. Okay, there it is. All right, so Yukiya is not really in this episode. He's kind of been taking a back seat for like the last two, right? This is mostly about Shiratama and what led up to her her breaking point. We get more insight about, you know, those letters that she was turning into origami cranes and like how that ties into her like psyche and everything. So we get a lot about her, and then we get a lot about Hamayu, right? Who is the princess that she was threatening to reveal her secret, right? But Hamayu is just, she's too cool to be blackmailed. So she just sits down and tells everyone everything, kind of. We know, like, maybe. First off, everyone's related. I feel like, let me pull up my Discord, because as I was like watching this, I was sending James messages at the exact same time. A lot of them like, wait, so and so is related to so and so, just sort of over and over again. So to quickly summarize, Okay, so the Empress, the current Empress, her brother is the head of the West.
The North, right? The one that Shiratama came from?
No. Hamayu.
Oh, that's the South.
South. Okay, so Hamayu is the South, right? Her dad, not really her dad, he's actually her uncle. Okay, so her uncle is the head of the South House right now. And he's also the brother to the current Empress, aka...
Wait, okay, so now I'm wondering if I got confused, because I thought that was Shiratama's dad.
Do I keep mixing them up?
I know. It's getting hard.
I thought it was the same guy. I thought it was the same guy that Wakamiya confronted when he sat down and Natsuko was already there. And
oh, wait, but that was about... That was about Hamayu, right?
That was about Hamayu.
You see, yeah. I'm also like, wait a minute. Who is being adopted by whom?
Everyone's fucking adopted. Okay, so I'm pretty sure.
Shiratama adopted too? Isn't that what we learned?
Not. She's like the third daughter. And so she was like legally... So she was picked. Yeah, she was like an heir, but she was legally picked. Okay, so...
Okay,
so... The Empress's brother is Hamayu's uncle, right? Mm-hmm. So Natsuka and Hamayu are probably loosely related as well, because they all come from the same family, because Natsuka is the Empress's son.
Yeah. They're cousins.
They are cousins, right? But we then also find out that Masuho no Suzuki, who is the Western princess, the one who's always in red, she and Wakamiya are cousins, first cousins as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Right. All right. We're tracking. So Hamayu's dad and her mother allegedly jointly murdered Wakamiya's mom and they are buried. But I don't believe that part because we see at the very beginning of the episode that Wakamiya puts flowers on their graves. We know it's the same grave because we saw Hamayu there when she was really young. Okay. Anyway, supposedly, Hamayu's whole secret is that she's an assassin, that she lost her rank. It's actually, again, similar to Shogun, because this is what happened to the main lady in Shogun. Her dad tried to kill the emperor and then failed, and then, you know, that got, like, screwed everything up for her. So she, her parents are almost immediately killed by her uncle, which means that he killed his own brother and sister-in-law due to it. And then she is supposed to be, I forget the exact term that they use, but it was awful. And it was the idea they were going
to... She's supposed to be a lifetime horse.
A lifetime horse. They were supposed to cut her third leg off entirely. Whereas in, like, the other indentured crow servants have it tied and they can be released. It would be permanent. And then she would just be
So messed up.
She's a literal child. It's just, you know, guilt by association, right? But this is when things get kind of weird because she's like, yeah, that was supposed to happen to me. But then they just like didn't do it. I'm like, really? That, you know, I mean, like stuff back then was harsh as far as like when you're dealing with imperialism and whatnot. So I have a hard time believing they were just like, no, unless her uncle actually was advocating for her. Like he's like, yeah, I'll kill my brother. But, you know, come on. Like, don't
just like throw, just leave her to die on the streets. Why don't
we? Yeah, it's basically what they did. They just like sent her to Nowheresville and she grew up, you know, living a rural life and all of this. And, but then she begs to have her honor, her lineage reinstated. And they're like, okay, you can if you kill the prince. And then we'll have the actual, her cousin, her uncle's niece or her uncle's daughter Nadeshiko then move in and marry Natsuka and it will set everything and then you could just go live your life or whatever. So that's supposed to be her whole deal, and she was allegedly just pilfering stuff on the side, maybe trying to like earn up some, put a little in her bank account so when she has to bail, she's got some money to live off of or something, maybe. And then she just flies off. She's like, well, plot's ruined. Bye.
They're going to kill me, so see you.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
That was crazy. That was crazy. Oh, man. Nick, you can't be making that joke in the chat. I'm gonna get caught in the middle of a fit in the middle of the conversation. But also, yes, this is also Chainsaw Man. Now, Lindsay,
this is all when my children get home from school. So, yeah,
Lindsay, what were you saying? Am I just losing my mind on account of all the? Sorry that. The joke that Nick made in the chat is almost breaking me. I can't.
Yeah.
Did you? I got it into my head, and I actually I did like I had to do some back and forth flipping with Hamayu because for a second there I was like he looks and I know why actually it's because the minute she flies away the show immediately cuts to Yukiya landing to talk to the prince. And when that happened, I'm like, wait a minute. Those two look really similar. They have like the same eye.
She and Yukiya do, or she and the prince? Yes.
She and Yukiya do. And so then I was like, my first thought was, is the twist going to be that Yukiya and Hamayu were the same person the whole time?
Which oh, jeez. I don't think that's possible. She's like taller. She's like taller than everyone else.
Yes.
In that room.
But the fact that she has these ties to like the lowly hill ravens,
right?
Had me wonder, like, well, wait a minute, could this be setting up some kind of deeper connection? Because one of the things I've been wondering is Yukiya's presence here, is he truly meant to be the one person who just kind of accidentally stumbled his way into this insane world of court intrigue? Or are we going to find out that his presence too is a part of this plot and that the show keeps reinforcing that we shouldn't trust anyone. We shouldn't assume that anyone is in this story for the reasons that they say they are.
Yeah.
And we didn't see Yukiya, you know, we saw what brought him here. Like we saw him get into the fight and then get, you know, get commanded to go serve the prince and all that stuff. But I don't know. I just kept, it's just one of those things where now I'm falling into the Empress's trap when she's playing her game with her brother, when they're just like, everyone in this palace is just a piece on our game board. And they're all, you know, they're all lying to each other. They all think we don't know what's going on, but we know everything they're doing. And we know all the moves they're going to make. And I'm like, what level of chess is the show playing here?
Right. They're playing Go while they're talking about it too. Like they're literally playing a game. Also the Empress is gorgeous in this.
I was very distracted
by how pretty she is, but you bringing up that she looked like Yukiya, I think Hamayu actually kind of resembles her aunt, right? That's her aunt? Yes. Yeah. Yes. So,
I don't think that she, I think the episode is really trying to like make people think that Hamayu is the one that killed Samome. Is that her name?
Samomo. Yeah.
I don't think she killed Samomo.
No, I don't think she killed Samomo either.
I don't think Shiratama killed Samomo either.
No, I don't think Shiratama did either. I think Hasebi did because I think she's the real assassin because at the end of this episode, they're like, well, I don't even think she's really the assassin. It's like, okay, well, she was lying about that. I don't know why Hamayu was lying about that part in particular, but I mean.
And again, the way that Hasebi's the only one in the opening that has that little smile, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I also think it's really funny that the prince has just been living as an alternate servant identity, like up here somewhere, and just sort of how is he passing? Because like, he's like got all these really refined features. I bet he has like no calluses anywhere on his hands.
No.
Like you're supposed to just.
And also, he has magic golden irises.
Yeah,
irises are literally glowing. But
yeah,
fine. No one's ever like seen the prince. I'm sure most people haven't. So,
but fill me in on this. This is a different dead bird, right?
Not dead. That bird's still alive.
Oh, right. Vaguely alive. But we don't have any idea what its identity is, right?
No. Again, the show wants us to think at least that it's Hamayu, because the last we see of her, she's flying off.
Right.
And then, you know.
And then the Empress seems wise on the fact that she's abandoned her supposed role.
So maybe she got poisoned or something. But the show also very intentionally does not tell us who this is. So I don't know.
Right. And if they don't transform back into human form before they die, apparently, like, you just don't get to know. Because that's one of the things that they pointed out about Kazuki's body, is they were having trouble identifying him because he was killed as a crow and they don't revert to human form.
I guess dental records don't work as well when you don't have teeth.
When you just have a beak, yeah.
Just a beak.
Yeah. And what did you think overall of Shiratama's story, though? I felt really bad for her, actually.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I think it helped because we talked last week about how her shift into cray cray mode was maybe a little sudden.
Yeah.
But this flashback showed that she's really been under this pressure her entire life. And
yeah,
the fact that she was lashing out in the way that she was also her snapping. Like, that's not how she's not usually a crazy, vindictive, scheming psycho.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And so the fact that she was threatening people, the fact that she was, you know, shoving Asabi into the river and stuff, that was just as much a sign of her breaking down as everything else was.
Yeah.
Which I think really worked well. I really liked that. And I feel bad for her and her gardener boyfriend.
Yeah. I liked their little, how they showed how their relationship built over time, with him bringing her like floral cuttings. And then she would leave him origami cranes in, I think, what was like an incense or something burner. And so that kind of leads to, I think what she was turning into cranes were actually his letters to her. So he's been like writing her all this time. People were aware, like, they weren't very good at keeping the relationship on the DL. So, like, I think most of her aides and stuff knew about it. Also, another fact that I think was casually dropped was that Hamayu was interfering with the prince's letters. Was that something?
Yes,
that's why they haven't gotten any of them. Is she has been like intercepting them and presumably maybe reporting back to her uncle about the contents and things like that, or holding onto them was his directive. I'm not sure, but that kind of explains what was going on there. Do you think Wakamiya is going to take like a more active role in what's going on in the Cherry Blossom Palace, or is it just too messed up now? Like, you just like can't.
Well, did you see the preview for next week's episode?
I did, but refresh me.
Oh, the episode is called Assassinating the Prince.
Right, yeah.
It's basically like people are just gonna start trying to kill him at this point. It's like,
I think so, yeah. So
I think
maybe
he's gonna have to. Like, I think the moral of this story is things in the Cherry Blossom Palace are out of control.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't figure that out, things are going to get worse. I think the deadline of him having to find a wife, like, I think that's still in effect, even though his options have now been whittled down to three, I guess.
If Shiratama is still considered viable, like,
I think she said she's sticking around. I think she's like, I'm not giving up.
Just but she's going to get hit.
I mean, what if Asabi and other girl are dead?
I do think there's still some larger plot involving like all of their parents at this point, right? Because it doesn't make any sense for Wakamiya to be leaving flowers at Hamayu's parents' grave if they literally killed his mom. Like, and I think he's not
he
a
feels
fan.
Bad that they got wrapped up in this conspiracy.
Yeah.
Trying to shut down.
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, unless they weren't actually the friend. What'd you say?
I said maybe he's trying to shut this conspiracy down with the help of a childhood friend
that
infiltrated the palace and is going to turn all of the women against each other and tear them
all from within.
We already know
her sister doesn't have smallpox. So she was already subbed in for suspicious reasons and we don't know why. And it's like, I just feel like all the parents are connected, like the emperor and Asebi's mom are connected. And then Wakamiya and Asabi are also connected as children. And then Hamayu's parents and Wakamiya's parents are connected. And then Hamayu's uncle and the Empress are connected. Like, it's just, it almost feels like everyone in the palace is being manipulated, which I guess is more or less said in this episode, by the generation immediately above them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just playing their parents' games.
Yeah.
To the end.
Yeah.
I think the prince should marry Sumio because of this. I think he and Sumio should abscond.
Even his bodyguard.
They should adopt Yukia.
Okay.
And then they should abscond to a nice little hillside cabin.
Yeah.
And just live the rest of their lives, not worrying about any of this. Just washing their claws of it, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. We still also have the Wisteria Guard. Who were they working for? Because they're deliberately not telling the prince's guard about what's going on in the palace. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. It's just this show is so good. It's so good. Guys, if you're watching this and you somehow haven't started watching this, or if you haven't been convincing all of your friends and family to watch Yataka Rasu, please do so.
Yeah.
The show needs a bigger audience.
Yeah.
Literally the only thing I can find to complain about it at this point is that the art is sometimes a little there's a couple of scenes where, especially if it's like a medium shot and it's like a character from far away, it's like but the writing is so good.
It's so good.
Yeah, I'm fine.
They're perfect at laying out the breadcrumbs, right? Because I feel like if they if they withheld any more breadcrumbs, I'd be frustrated. If they gave me any more, I'd be confused. So it's just like the perfect drip of, you don't really drip breadcrumbs. I ruined it, but you know what I mean. Like, it's just the information. Yeah, just a little meme of salt. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
No, this show's great.
Excellent show. All right. Okay, everybody, thanks for tuning in for this early version of the In and After show. We should have the audio version of this up tomorrow, and we will be back again next week with more details about the trailer watch party, but mark your calendars, last week of June is what we're looking at, just trying to nail down the date. So, all right, thanks again, James, and thanks again, Richard, who I'm sure is, just off screen somewhere in Japan. So,
yeah.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.